Good afternoon. The Early Learning and Elementary Education Subcommittee will now come to order. For the record, members, as always, please remember to turn on your microphone for the roll call. Missy, please call the roll.
Chair Lupus.
Here.
Vice Chair Cosgrove.
Here.
Ranking Member Davis.
Here.
Representative Caruso.
Happy New Year, and yes, I'm here.
Representative DeSigley. Representative Duggan.
Here.
Representative Hawkins.
Here.
Representative Hunshofsky.
Here.
Representative LaMarca.
Here.
Representative Learned.
Here.
Representative McCurdy. Representative Moody.
Here.
Representative Nixon.
Here.
Representative Roach.
Present.
Representative Rodriguez.
I'm present.
Representative Tribolsi.
Happy New Year and here.
Representative Trunell.
Here.
Representative Williams.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you, Missy. Members, let the record show that a quorum is present. Please remember, silence all electronic devices and be recognized by the chair before addressing the committee or the presenters. Members, we have two bills on our agenda today. We are going to begin with HB 255, Private Instructional Personnel Providing Applied Behavioral Analysis Services, by the one and only Representative Plasensi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you only knew how much time I've been in Tallahassee, I literally ran from the parking lot two blocks down because I had to park the RV very far away, but thank you for the exercise. Mr. Chair, members of this committee, let me just read real quickly what we have on here, and then I'm going to explain the bill a little bit further. So HB 255 amends current Florida statutes to add registered behavior technicians, which are RBTs, to the list of private instructional personnel who must be allowed to provide ABA services in the classroom setting. These individuals hold a nationally recognized paraprofessional certification in behavior analysis and practice under the supervision of either a certified behavior analysis an analyst or professionals licensed under Chapter 490 or 491. And Mr. Chair, do you want me to go into the amendment first or finish explaining?
Representative, your daughter here is not gonna help you pass this bill. Go ahead. She's the best. Go ahead and present the full bill. We'll do questions on the bill, and then we'll take up the amendment.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, so I explained to you something that was, fairly self-explanatory, but I wanted to go in just slight depth into what an RBT does and the importance of this bill. So behavior analysis has been something very recent. When you're looking into the treating of young people and older people with cognitive disabilities. And so we're learning more about the industry or the field and the science behind it. And because of that, it evolves. And so a legislature before us found it prudent and appropriate to require that behavior analysts who treat children on the autism spectrum with Down syndrome or some forms of ADHD at times, to allow them to go into a classroom so that they can provide services in the area where the services are needed. Whenever you're trying to change or modify the behavior of an individual, you want to make sure that you're teaching them how to change their behavior in the actual setting that it's taking place. At the time that we passed that law, I think it was 2011, an RBT wasn't a thing at the time. And then eventually it evolved. So you had a board-certified behavior analyst, you had a board-certified assistant behavior analyst, and then eventually became the RBT. And through the changes that we've had in the industry itself and best practice, but also in how we bill through Medicaid, RBTs began to take a front role in the providing of that therapy. And so what we have now in the current framework of applied behavior analysis is where the RBT provides anywhere from 85 to 90% of all of the therapies that a child gets, and a board certified behavior analyst provides the supervision to the RBT. So what we found, the problem we found ourselves about 3 or 4 years back when I started receiving multiple calls from constituents is that their therapist wasn't allowed in the classroom. And the reason their therapist wasn't allowed in the classroom is because the law specifically said that a board-certified behavior analyst could be in the classroom, but it's pretty vague as to who else could go into the classroom. So some school districts were allowing for RBTs to be in the classroom and some were not. And what we wanted to make sure that we corrected was we wanted to make sure that that all school districts were allowing for the therapist that treats the child to be in the classroom. And so that's what you're seeing in this bill. It's essentially making sure that our policies and our laws are up to date with the way that the type of therapy is practiced in today's healthcare system. And that's the bill.
Thank you, Representative. Members, are there questions on the underlying bill? Questions? All right. We do have one amendment. Representative Plasencia, you are recognized to explain Amendment 1, Barcode 767577.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment adds that to provide services under this section, the RBT must be employed by an enrolled Medicaid provider.
Members, any questions on the amendment? All right, seeing none, are there any objections to the amendment? All right, show the amendment adopted without objection. We're back on the bill as amended, and we do have public testimony. First up, Jennifer Ungrew with PBS, waiving support, thank you. Amy Shelton Wilson, PBS. Would you like to speak? You're recognized, thank you for being with us.
Yeah, thank you for allowing me to speak. I'm here in support of House Bill 255. My name's Amy Wilson. I'm a certified behavior analyst that works for Positive Behavior Supports, and I'm a former teacher. As a behavior analyst, part of my role is to develop and implement behavioral interventions for children who qualify for exceptional student education services. These interventions do not interfere with instruction, but instead complement it by providing a medically necessary service that helps to reduce challenging behaviors like physical aggression, self-injurious behavior, and property destruction. These behaviors impede the student's ability to learn and disrupt other students, placing unnecessary burdens on our teachers and staff. It doesn't have to be like this. Today, I want to let you know there's a large disconnect between the number of available and already funded resources to children in schools and what's currently being used. We're seeing a lack of consistency across the state in terms of what individual school districts are allowing within their school districts. Within the field of behavioral analysis, we use a tiered service delivery model. That means a board-certified individual like me develops a plan and then works with and supervises the implementation of these plans by an RBT. An RBT is a certified technician-level paraprofessional. The RBT delivers most of the day-to-day services. Within the field of behavioral analysis, using well-trained technicians is the most cost-effective and clinically appropriate way to deliver services. Across the state, some schools only allow board-certified analysts and no RBTs, while other schools don't allow any level of ABA services at all. Despite current law, passing House Bill 255 would provide schools with the opportunity to benefit from results of ABA. This would come without any additional cost to school districts, as the services are currently authorized and fully covered through either Florida Medicaid or private insurance company benefits. Thank you for your time and consideration in passing House Bill 255.
Thank you so much. We do have a question for you, if you don't mind. Ranking Member Davis.
Hi. Thank you, Chair. Didn't
How
expect that one.
I didn't.
I'm well. Thank you for coming to testify on behalf of HB 255. My question is, when I heard you mention that as a therapist, you create a plan, and so this is a coordination of a lot of different entities for the child, how does this your plan incorporate into a plan such as an IEP that a child may already have? Yeah. How does that work?
Sure, absolutely. So our plans are a little different than the IEP, but we go to IEP meetings all the time. We work collaboratively with the school districts, the schools, and especially the families in order to have a cohesive plan behaviorally and academically with the student.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, you've a lot of questions.
Hi.
Representative Williams, you're recognized.
Hello.
How are you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for all you do.
Thank you.
Passing 255, will it give you the ability to become an independent consultant for children that have problems, or you would have to continue to be connected to the school board in order to work in this cellar?
So I think that's kind of part of the problem. Across the state, it's different with each county, right? Leon County, for instance, is where I primarily work and practice, and they allow RBTs and behavior analysts and BCABAs into the school districts. We have like a standard protocol, which we follow. We have a MOI with Leon County, for instance, and they are very welcoming. However, other districts are not. They will not let us in at all, and it's just at their discretion. So really, it's a disservice, right, for these kids and these teachers who desperately need the help.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Dr. Steve Coleman with the Florida Association for Behavior Analysis. Waiving support. Thank you, sir. James McFadden, Autism Speaks. A proponent of the bill. Caitlin Clibben with Disability Rights Florida. Waiving in support. Melissa Peterson. You recognize.
Hi. Just start.
You can, whenever you're ready.
Okay. I would like to first thank you all for allowing me to come today and speak on behalf of my stepson. I am speaking to you today not only as a special needs mother, but also as a former RBT and current BCABA. My son is 15 years old, and I've been in his life since he was 3. He is diagnosed with ADHD, autism, sensory processing disorder, generalized anxiety, intellectual disability, and apraxia of speech. If you'd asked me 12 years ago, before I was introduced to the unique life of being a special needs parent, what an RBT was or what ABA is, I would have had no clue. Sorry. Over the last 12 years, I have been to countless IEP meetings, parent-teacher meetings, and administrative meetings, on top of the sometimes daily phone calls, because of my child's behaviors interrupting not only his own academic progress, but also the academic progress of others. My son has definite... Sorry, very nervous.
You're doing well.
My son has deficits in cognitive ability, emotional regulation, appropriate communication, attention, and de-escalation. He has never been mainstreamed, and he has always been in a special needs classroom. What this means for him is that not only does he have to regulate his own behaviors, he has an average of 6 to 12 other students who are also trying to regulate their behaviors, which results in frequent disruption for all of the students in the classroom. Sometimes students have to be removed for, you know, minutes, hours, dependent on behaviors. And special needs educators and educators in general have my utmost respect. It is not easy to be understaffed and attempt to regulate a positive learning environment with multiple students that require behavioral support. This is why I don't understand and am heartbroken over why anyone would attempt to justify not allowing support staff into the classroom to assist the students and teachers with creating a positive learning environment. Having experience as an RBT, I can assure you that all RBTs are fully credentialed and constantly monitored by the BACB and their supervising BCBAs. I was never allowed to work one-on-one with a client without first being fully trained on their behavior plan and supervised by a BCBA while implementing the behavior plan. RBTs have to recertify yearly and show that they are competent to deliver services and that they have received adequate supervision. In the public school setting, teachers are expected to implement behavior plans for each student. They are expected to do this without proper training or adequate staff in the classroom to allow for the behavior plan to be properly implemented. RBTs and other ABA staff are not disruptive to the learning environment. They are solely there to provide support for students and educators. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. Thank you for coming to be with us. Marucci Guzman from Santiago and Friends Family Center for Autism. Waiving in support. I should hope so. It would be terrible, Representative Placenzi, if your wife waved in opposition. That's something my wife would do. Marta Fiol from the Florida Association for Behavioral Analysis. You're recognized.
Do I get to blow a kiss to the baby too? Hi, thank you very much for allowing us to come speak with you today. I am a board-certified behavior analyst. I am the president of the Florida Association for Behavior Analysis as well. About 3 years ago, I received a phone call from a parent that their child was receiving services in a school, and our school in Brevard County overturned their decision, and the RBTs were banned from being able to provide services. This parent was devastated. Their child has multiple needs. He reached out to me and asked for some assistance. I tried as best as I could to explain that RBTs are individuals that work under the Behavior Analyst Certification Board. That didn't seem to work, so I did call Coach P to see if we could get some assistance for the individuals that do need this vital service. RBTs receive extensive training, testing, background screenings, ongoing supervision, on-site, and feedback. These individuals provide assistance, sometimes from home to the school and back again. There are significant shortages in some of our counties in paraprofessionals or teachers' assistants that can handle some individuals that have significant needs, and especially if they're highly aggressive. The RBTs that we are sending in are trained, supervised, and do not cost our school districts anything extra. Our job is to go in, train, assist, and then be able to get out of the way so those individuals, those students, can get their educationally relevant services. Updating the statutes will help address the workforce shortages so that students with disabilities can receive their medically necessary services. Let's all work together to update the letter of the law so it reflects the spirit of the law. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much for being with us. Jamie Stafford.
Hi.
You're recognized.
Okay. Just gonna jump right into it. I'm a single mom of a 15-year-old boy that is autistic, along with many other behavioral issues. Missy is my son's stepmom, and she became a behavioral therapist to better understand his disabilities, his behaviors, and to help him. These therapists that we are asking to be brought into the public schools are paid for by us parents, not the school. A full-time behavioral therapist is not affordable for me, but a registered behavioral therapist, an RBT, at $40 an hour, I can keep in the classroom longer and afford that. Some of these teachers are under the impression that RBTs are against the school and going to report back to the parents. That is not the case. They are here to help these teachers and teacher aides. My son had an RBT in the past. Having that extra support allowed him to not get kicked out of after school programs. We were finally able to phase that out. But now he's 15 and he's in high school. He's in a contained classroom and he's been suspended twice already. His environment has changed and he needs more support that the school is unable to give us. These RBTs go through rigorous background checks. At the end of the day, it should be about the child that needs these important services. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for being with us. Members, that concludes public testimony. We are now in debate. Is there debate on the bill? Representative Caruso, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Placencia, I just wanted to say your service to our children as a teacher for the past 15 years, now through this good bill, is very much appreciated. We need hands-on treatment of our children in the actual setting that they live in, and we know that will have a crucial impact to their treatment. So, you know, I was down on this bill at one time, but Madeline, you know, she came to my office and convinced me otherwise. So I will be up on this bill. Thank you for bringing it forward.
Vice Chair Koster, in debate.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for a great, important bill. But I actually want to speak to the moms that came before us today. And I want to applaud you not only for your accuracy, or not accuracy, advocacy for your son, but I want to applaud you as a family law lawyer for your co-parenting that you guys are doing together for the benefit of your son. That is above and beyond and incredible. And so I applaud you not only for your advocacy and for being here and for all the hard work that it takes, but also for for your ability to be a mom and a bonus mom together. That's incredible.
Representative LaMarca.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I echo a lot of the things that were said by previous speakers. And I've seen people try to use every advantage in the world, but I've never, to this point, ever seen anybody use such an adorable advocate to bring into this room. I don't know if there's an age limit on lobbyists or if she fell out of form or not, but we know your hearts and they're always in the right place, and it's a great bill, but this puts it over the top.
I'm distracted. Any additional debate? Ranking Member Davis, in debate.
I just wanted to concur. I love going back and forth with you when things aren't so good, but I also like to praise you, Rep. Placencia, when you have great things before us. And so I would like to just echo the comments that have already been said, but I love to have advocates in the audience and that testify before us to let us know what pieces of legislation really means to them and their families. So thank you to the parents that are here. And I have to definitely echo my colleague. I had my head down writing, and then when the mom came up and identified the stepmom and the family, it's really great to hear the partnership that's been formed to ensure that the son and the family, the child and the family, is definitely cared for and supported. So again, thank you, Rep. Placencia, for bringing this bill before us.
Representative Duggan has called a point of order on the use of a prop.
That's so unfair.
Members, any additional debate? Okay, seeing no further debate, I don't know if you could have gotten this one across the finish line without your daughter, Representative Placencia, but I'm so glad that she's here. She's so blessed to have you as her dad and Marucci as her mom. Members, I would just say this before we yield the close to Representative Placencia. I know how hard you've worked on this bill. This has been something that you and I have had a conversation about for the last 5 weeks, and it warms my heart that the bill is here, and just grateful for your leadership. So with that, Representative Placencia, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in closing, I want to thank everyone who came up here. It's, you know, it's difficult for us. There's 120 of us. Then you have staff, you have the Senate. And we hear bills and we see the writing, but sometimes it's hard to see the real impact. But when you have parents and families come up here and talk about their experiences and see their passion and understand their challenges, it really brings to our hearts why we're up here. And why we run so many of the bills we do, because it's about people, it's about helping people, and we don't always get it right, but there are times when we don't always get it right, but we work as hard as we can to get it right. And when we do, we know that we're making a big difference in their lives. I want to thank the chair, I want to thank his staff for listening to me, the many times that I've gone and speak to them, for taking the time to sit down and go over the policy and making sure we get it right. And with that, I close.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Placencia, having closed on his bill, Missy, please call the roll.
Representatives Caruso?
Yes.
Davis?
Yes.
DeSigley?
Yes.
Duggan?
Yes.
Hawkins?
Yes.
Penchofsky?
Yes.
Koster?
Yes.
LaMarca?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
McCurdy?
Yes.
Mooney?
Yes.
Nixon? Roach?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Trabulsi?
Yes.
Prunow?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Chair Lupus?
Yes.
18 yeas, 0 nays.
18 yeas, 0 nays. Members, by your vote, HB 255 will be reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative Placencia. All right, members, we are moving into the next bill on the agenda from our very own Representative Nixon. HB 1319, the School Readiness Program.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, everyone. Chair Alupis, Vice Chair Koster, Ranking Member Davis, and the members of the Early Learning and Elementary Education Subcommittee. Today, I'm presenting on HB 1319, School Readiness. I often make it known I went from 1 to 5 kids in a matter of a few years through the blending of my family with my husband's and finally having an hours baby in 2020. It's been 13 years since I had a baby in the household, and prices have indeed changed since then, particularly in the area of childcare. Currently, childcare is the second largest household expense behind housing. These costs require families to make difficult decisions regarding employment, thus limiting their opportunities for economic mobility. However, through the state school readiness program, families that are economically disadvantaged have the opportunity to participate in the workforce through the receipt of subsidized childcare. This workforce support not only helps parents, but also provides access to high-quality learning environments that promote child development and school readiness. As Florida sees entry-level wages rise, thanks largely in part to Floridians that voted for the minimum wage ballot initiative, many families are unfortunately becoming ineligible for these services while already seeing increases in housing and food costs that far outpace the increase in wages. There are three important provisions of this bill. The first provision of this bill revises the definition of economically disadvantaged to include a family income that does not exceed 150% of federal poverty level or a family income which is at 70% of the state median income, whichever is greater. An economically disadvantaged family is eligible to receive subsidies for childcare under the school readiness program as long as that family size income is at or below right now 150 of the federal poverty guidelines. Based on 2021 federal poverty guidelines, 150% of the FPL for a household of four is an annual gross of only $39,750.18. So let's do the math. Median rent for two-bedroom apartments in Florida is $1,670 a month. Times that by 12, that's $20,040. If you spend $250 per person a month on food, that's $1,000 a month. Let's multiply that by 12. That's $12,000. That literally leaves you with less than $650 a month to go towards childcare, utilities, transportation, clothes, et cetera. Let's put this in perspective now. Two parents, if there's a two-parent household working, making the current minimum wage, which is now $10 an hour, in Florida, they exceed the federal poverty income levels by $1,849 and I think it's like 82 cents a year. That's if they're making minimum wage. So something has to change. If this bill passes, a household of four, Okay, making this change would allow the state to determine eligibility based on the Florida data versus just the national poverty level that is calculated using the data from all 50 states. As Florida continues to outpace the nation in many aspects, this important policy change will continue to support the needs of low-income working families and educational opportunities for Florida's youngest learners. So that's the first provision. The second provision of these bills helps to ensure that early learning providers who serve school readiness children are paid the same minimum approved Early Learning Coalition reimbursement rate for meeting the state's minimum school readiness standards, regardless of that provider's private pay rate. This helps to create parity in service delivery based on the cost of care instead of what different markets can command, which often results in providers being paid substantially different rates for the same level of service. I have experienced this firsthand, how it affects families. I went scouting for a daycare for Juice, my baby Juice, I call her Juice, Ashanti, this past year. And a school that was recommended to me had an opening for a one-year-old. I fell in love with the home facility. And at the end of the tour, I finally asked her how much was the rate. She asked me, did I have a voucher? I told her no. She dropped her head and said that, she said that she wishes she could provide me with a more reasonable rate. However, if she did, she would be forced to be reimbursed that rate, which would be lower than what the reimbursement rate was. And so I could not afford the rates in which she was charged, the rates in which were the reimbursement rates at that time, because again, I got five kids now. And so that left me having to depend on my mom for childcare. And so oftentimes providers simply bite the bullet at times, if they don't raise rates, and that can cause that's because they know the community can't afford it, and that actually causes them to be reimbursed at lower rates, which also jeopardizes the quality of care and the resources that they can put into the facility. And then finally, the last provision will help support the early learning workforce, which we've heard about so many times in many of our committees, by giving them access to care. Currently, the federal Office of Child Care allows the state to define its state child care and development fund plan, the definition of essential worker, and so for purposes of receiving access to subsidized child care. With this bill, we will now classify early learning child care workers as essential workers, thereby providing them with the opportunity to get subsidized child care. Currently, the average wage of a child care instructor is between $12 and $14, and sometimes that causes them to, of course, exceed the FPL. This reality does not allow for large-scale wage increases without raising the cost of childcare tuition paid by parents. And by requiring the Division of Early Learning to amend its state plan and offer childcare as a workforce support, Florida will be able to track over the next 2 years if this investment led to workforce retention. This data could help inform future policy decisions as we look to support Florida's economic development, recognizing that families need childcare to participate in the workforce. North Florida Healthy Start Coalition is on board, along with other countless organizations, childcare providers, and parents. Tons of parents, especially mommies that really want to get back to work. And as Florida continues to outpace the nation in many aspects, these important policy changes will continue to support the needs of working families and educational opportunities for Florida's youngest learners. And that is the bill. I know it was massive, but it is very important.
Thank you, Representative Nixon. Members, are there questions for the representative? I'd be nervous, Representative Nixon. Representative McCurdy, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was a lot. And even after all that, I didn't hear the answer to my questions in their presentation. I'll start with this first question. Representative Nixon, you mentioned that you thought something was about 82 cents in your mathematic presentation. Can you get us the exact numbers? We like to vote on exact numbers.
I sure can.
You're recognized.
And so, yes. So in Florida, let me see where we're at. Okay, two parents making the current minimum wage with two kids, right? Or yeah, if they're making the current minimum wage, they exceed the federal poverty income by $1,849.82 a year. So those folks and their kids would not be eligible under today's law to get subsidized child care.
You're recognized for a follow-up, Representative McCurdy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rep. Nixon, in line 101 of your bill, it says number of child care personnel in the state whose children were. We may want to specify which state, because we don't want people from other states just thinking they can take advantage of this. Do you agree?
You recognize.
Yes, right. We can work on that.
You're recognized, Representative.
Last follow up, because Rep. Nixon took so much of our committee time. finally, in lines 43, for example, the word rate is underlined. for example, in line 45 too. But my question is, there was in your bill, line 91, the word rate is not underlined. Is there any reason for that non-uniformity of rate being underlined in your bill?
You recognize.
You know, rate is when it's underlined, we're adding things into the bill. And, you know, as a member of the trifecta, I don't understand why you just fielding me with all these questions. But I appreciate it. I think I'm answering them. I'm sorry. Through the chair.
I don't know what trifecta means, but it's through me. Representative LaMarca for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nixon, is this your first bill?
You're recognized.
I don't recall if he asked that question. I apologize.
So technically, yes, but I did a prime co-sponsorship last year. So that was my first presentation. And I had a prop in the area of my daughter Juice as well. But yes, this is my first bill.
You're recognized.
Quick follow-up. So that was a yeah, but. But. The second question is, you called me on Friday, February 4th at 12:02 p.m., which means that after everybody else left this building, you were still working this bill. Is that true?
You're recognized.
Yes, I was, because it's that important.
Just like for the record to state that the Representative Nixon, I also checked to see if I was up on the bill that I put on our agenda. Any other questions for the representative? Representative Rodriguez with a question? No way. Representative Hawkins, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And this, in all seriousness, first of all, related to the first provision, is Florida the first one to do this, to not calculate the federal? Or is it just, are we taking the lead?
You recognize.
Thank you, Chair. No, we are not.
Okay, thank you. And it's a bill this time has come with other things that have been done when you talked about the wage increase and that. So definitely be up. And I'm just glad that your text message asking for support wasn't as long as your explanation. Thank you.
I'd like to thank Representative Hawkins for debating during questions. any additional questions? Representative Williams? Up debate? All right. Seeing no further questions, last call. All right, we do have public testimony. Karen Woodall, Florida Center for Fiscal and Economic Policy. Waving in support. Thank you, Ms. Woodall. Michelle Watson, the Florida Alliance of Children's Councils and Trusts. Waving in support. Thank you, Ms. Watson. Dr. Watson. Denise Marzullo, the Early Learning Coalition of Duval. You're recognized. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm Denise Marzullo. I'm the president and CEO of the Early Learning Coalition of Duval. And I just want to thank Representative Nixon for all of your care and concern when it comes to early learning. I know that you've had your own experiences, and you and I have talked, and your genuine care for the families in Duval County and across the state of Florida is definitely seen in this wonderful bill. I can speak for how this bill will affect families and providers in Duval County. The ELC of Duval has several legislative priorities, two of which are preserving parental choice and supporting Florida's workforce. This bill preserves parental choice by ensuring that all parents in Duval County will be able to have access to high-quality care, no matter which zip code they live in. It also ensures that early learning programs throughout the county are provided the same level of voucher for school readiness children that they serve to support high-quality education, regardless of the constraints of the community in which they operate. Additionally, this bill will support our workforce and ultimately Florida's workforce in two very important ways. Shifting the state median index will allow working families to maintain their access to child care services, which allows them to continue working. Including our child care workforce in the definition of essential personnel will assist with the recruitment of child care employees to an industry that is critical in supporting Florida's workforce as a whole. Without the child care workforce, many industries would not have a workforce. So in closing, I just want to thank you, as always, Representative Alupis, Ranking Member Davis, and all of the members here today for working so hard and tirelessly to ensure an equitable, high-quality early learning education for all of Florida's children. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I'd ask Imani, Florida Rising, waving in support. Pamela Birch Fort, Florida State Conference for NAACP Branches, waving in support. Edward Briggs, Helios Education Foundation, waving in support. Elizabeth Berglund, United Way of Miami-Dade, Waiving in support. Natalie Fussell, the Impact Project. Waiving in support. Thank you so much. Jared Willis. Waiving in support. Thank you so much. All right, members, we are now in debate. Representative Honchowski, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Lupus. Representative Nixon, I just want to, first of all, commend you on your passion for childcare, for families, for children. That is one thing that we always hear from you, and you bring such passion and real-life experience and research to that topic, and I just want to thank you for that. What I love about this bill is, one of the many things I love about it, is that the early learning professionals are deemed essential workers, because if anybody was paying attention during the pandemic, that was very apparent. And to have them elevated and recognized as such, I think, is incredibly important, along with all the other things, making quality early childcare more affordable and accessible to all families. So I just want to thank you very much for this great bill.
Representative Tribolsi, in debate.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Nixon, for bringing this great bill forward. I, too, had the pleasure of speaking to you for 1 minute and 21 seconds on Friday at 12:09, so you did speak with Representative LaMarca first. But I'm sure that our conversation was more meaningful. I really appreciate this bill. I would echo the sentiments of Representative Honchowski with providing that child care personnel are essential workers. I think that's a huge step and a great recognition for people who have not been recognized before. But I'm just excited by your excitement over this bill. And I mean that with all sincerity. When we spoke for that brief time on Friday, you could just tell how tickled pink you were that this was coming before this committee and how excited you were for your hard work. And so I appreciate that, and you, and congratulations.
Representative Williams, you recognize?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Rep. Nixon, I want to say I really appreciate this well-thought-out bill. A lot of people don't understand when we're talking about child care, we take it for granted. But let's think. If the child care providers shut down, the world shuts down. And we look at it as just something we're dropping our kids off to provide services for us while we go to work. But I look at it as thinking about if we don't have people in place that have a heart to care for our children, why would we want to drop our child off to that location? And being an early learning provider in a prior life, you have your child care providers. They are the bus driver, the principal, the parent partnership, community connections. You everything to the community. That's a large pillar that we have in our community that providing the service that we take for granted. So I want to say thank you very much for this well-thought-out bill. And I appreciate you as a representative that I'm working alongside. Thank you.
Representative McCurdy, in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rep. Nixon, seriously, you're exactly a great example of the type of everyday person that we need in this process. When you talk about the average salaries, expenses of average everyday working Floridians, and just some of the things they face, I think it can get lost in some of the conversations that we have up here. So just want to say thank you. I'm grateful to work with you. And I look forward to saying yes when my name is called to supporting this bill. And also look forward to the future legislation that you bring forth. This being the first bill that, you know, authored by you, is only a sign of things to come. So thank you for standing up and being the everyday person in the legislature.
Ranking Member Davis, in debate.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Rep. Nixon. I appreciate it. It is nice to hear that so many colleagues had phone calls and text messages from you, because I didn't receive one of those. But anyway, so
I just had to get that dig in. No, Rep. Nixon is a great partner in this process, and just want to congratulate her for this. Again, I think it's already been said, well thought out bill. And thank you for our Duval County representation with Denise Marzullo for being here. We appreciate that. But again, the essence of the provisions you've provided us here in this bill are commendable and definitely a huge reach in preserving parents' ability to choose, regardless of the community they live in. So great job. Congratulations.
Representative LaMarca, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the members that didn't get a phone call, the text message was 194 words, in case you have any limits. It was very thorough. And although you didn't call me back, Rep. Nixon, because you were now I know that you were on the phone with Representative Tribulzi for a while. On a serious note, I'm running a different bill that doesn't, we'll probably be seeing it next year, let me put it that way, but it deals with benefit cliffs and fiscal cliffs, and it's a real thing, and we want to do some good things for the people of Florida, and the country wanted to do the same thing for the people of this entire country. We need to really think about how people can do their everyday work and use certain opportunities to pick themselves up from not even poverty, but just everyday life to prosperity. And sometimes you need a glide path to do that. And I think that this goes the way to doing that. So I'm going to support it.
Members, any additional debate? Representative Hawkins? Oh, you already debated. I apologize. So before I hand it over to Representative Nixon, what many of you don't know is that we had the panel during committee week where we had a number of center directors come up and talk about the reality of what they were experiencing on the ground. And it was after that committee where Representative Nixon called me and said, I want to do something. I really want to help. And I'm just so grateful for your leadership on this. The issues that you're bringing as somebody who's worked in this arena for over a decade, these are really important policies that you're proposing. So, again, thank you so much for bringing this bill. And with that, Representative, you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Chair. So I'd like to just first, again, thanks to Chair Lupis for allowing this bill to be on today's agenda and for, like, listening to me and answering my phone calls and also connecting me with the Florida Alliance of Children's Councils and Trusts and Michelle Watson for helping me craft this legislation. I also want to thank Holly Bullard of the Florida Policy Institute for bringing a part of this bill to my attention before even committee started. And also the Early Learning Coalition of Duval, particularly Denise Marzullo, for taking my calls and answering my questions. But look, y'all, I had a cousin who died to the school. He fell victim to school to prison pipeline. And that's one of the main reasons I decided to get involved in politics. And I'm sorry, I'm crying. And I don't want that to happen to any more kids in the state of Florida. And so I feel that early learning is a critical step in curbing that. Because if we're able to get kids on the front end and capture them and educate them so they know how to read, right, we don't have to worry about that later on. And that's what happened to my cousin. And so this bill is really near and dear to me. And then just thinking today, I just dropped my daughter off for the first time at a childcare facility. and so I know this will help a ton of people. And so with that, I ask for your favorable support. I'm sorry, I am crying, and I close, Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Nixon having closing on her bill. Missy, please call the roll.
Representatives Caruso?
Yes.
Davis?
Yes.
DeSigley?
Yes.
Duggan?
Yes.
Hawkins?
Yes.
Anshofsky?
Yes.
Koster?
Yes.
LaMarca?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
McCurdy?
Yes.
Mooney?
Yes.
Nixon?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
A strong yes.
Tribulzi?
Yes.
Trunau?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Chair Lupus?
Yes.
18 yes, 0 nays.
Members, by your vote, HB 1319 will be reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative Nixon. All right, members, that concludes the bill portion of our agenda. Now we're going to move into the presentation part of our agenda. As you recall, last year we passed HB 3, the New Worlds Reading Initiative, by our very own Representative Dana Trabolsi. This bill took the speaker's vision of delivering books to the homes of struggling readers and made it a reality. Under the bill, students who are not reading on grade level can receive a book delivered to their home every month to help them build a home library and get them excited about reading. And just as importantly, parents receive resources to help provide a literacy-rich home environment for their children. Last summer, the Department of Education selected the Lastinger Center for Learning at the University of Florida to administer the initiative, and book deliveries began this past December. So with us today, the one and only Dr. Phil Pokert, director of the Lastinger Center, and Dr. Shantae Duggins, the assistant director for the New Worlds Reading Initiative, to give us an implementation update. Dr. Duggins and Dr. Pokert, you are both recognized.
Much and good afternoon to this committee. It's a tough act to follow, I'll say. Really appreciate seeing the collegial environment that you've created here, Chair Lupus. I want to thank you, the vice chair, the ranking member, and all the members of the committee for hearing us today. It gives us great pleasure to be able to deliver this implementation update to you on where we are with the New Worlds Reading Initiative, because we've really started with some strong momentum and aim to continue that in the days and months ahead in service of Florida's children and their love of and skill in reading. So, we are going to go ahead and give you a little bit of information in regards to enrollment, tell you a little bit about where we are in terms of recruitment and engagement efforts, as well as opportunities for partnerships with corporations operating in Florida, and then look forward to taking your questions at the end of the presentation. So where we are with enrollment, we are pleased to let you know that we began enrollment on October 12th. We came here to Tallahassee and presented to the Education Committee back in early November. At that time, announced that we had 30,000 students already enrolled. We're proud to report that we've tripled since then. So we're at over 90,000 students already enrolled. We know that we still have a long way to go in order to reach all of Florida's eligible students, but we're really pleased to let you know that that enrollment is taking place not just in English, but also in Spanish and Haitian Creole in service of families who don't speak English at home. And we have launched a new enrollment website, which allows us to smooth out that process in order to verify addresses immediately as students are enrolling into the program. And we're continuing to refine that recruitment process, planning towards paper-based enrollment to make sure that we're reaching all families in the year ahead. So in year two, we're going to start that paper-based enrollment process. We'll continue an online enrollment process throughout the rest of this year. And this photo is from a home delivery event that we did with Speaker Sprouse in his district. And so this was one of the first families that received books as a part of their enrollment. This gives you a sense of what it looks like across the state. These numbers are as of Friday. They continue to tick up every single day. We have 91,000 students currently enrolled. You see how it looks across the state. Pleased to let you know that our top five districts in terms of counties, we have Lee with about 8,700, is followed closely by Miami-Dade County, Orange County, Polk County, and Hillsborough rounding out the top five. You'll see that the topic selections, because as students enroll into the program, we ask them to select topics of interest. So you can see adventure, humor, and nature being the top three there. And you can see these trend lines give you a sense of what the total enrollment is and where we see daily spikes in enrollment across the months that we have been open for enrollment. We're going to continue to push forward in order to get more students recruited and enrolled in the program. And so to give you a sense of what's planned here, we have already distributed a digital marketing toolkit to districts across the state. That means that we have supported that with over 700,000 flyers that we've printed and distributed to every single school in the state. We have just settled on some new branding in collaboration with Scholastic, as you know, was chosen as the book distribution partner in order to implement the New Worlds Reading. And so we've just settled on our new branding. And so we're preparing to print out thousands more flyers that are going to go out to schools for a new recruitment push in the weeks ahead. Those materials include this QR code, which makes it really easy for families to get to the website where they can engage in that enrollment process. To extend that outreach effort, we're partnering with different organizations all across the state, and we've been really pleased to see the outpouring of support that we've received from different educationally focused organizations in the state of Florida. So we've given them toolkits as well, which includes digital messaging that they can use on their websites or in newsletters or emails that they send out. We've also given them some assets that they can use in their social media communications, as well as flyers that they can also distribute to families in multiple languages to make sure that we're reaching all of the eligible families across the state. So these are all efforts that we have ongoing. Beyond that, we're also going to be engaging in some mass media communications. And so with Scholastic, they brought on Edelman as the communications partner. And so you'll see that we're targeting a handful of the DMAs, different regions across the state where we see either high numbers of eligible students or high concentrations in terms of the percentage of eligible students. You'll see that we've selected a handful of markets where we're going to really be pushing out radio and TV ads, but there will also be marketing efforts, particularly in online marketing efforts, that will be taking place all across the state. And so we've really done this in terms of a data-based approach to make sure that we're reaching those communities that have real high numbers and concentrations of students, but there will be a statewide communications efforts, particularly using the online marketing strategies. Working with Edelman, we've been making some progress in terms of what that media campaign will look like, and so we've not just settled on a new logo here, but we've also settled in terms of messaging. And so one of the things that we've wanted to do is to make New Worlds not simply about performance in reading, but about the connections that reading can create for students and for their families. And so one of the messages overall is this basic notion that reading makes you, you. And so a lot of the messaging will be surrounding that campaign, and we're going to be exploring where that can take us through this communications campaign, which will include, as I said, radio ads, print ads, TV ads, online ads, and a whole variety of different communications approaches to make sure that we're reaching all the eligible students. My colleague, Shantae Duggins, is going to give you a little bit about the book selection and some other information in regards to the program's implementation.
Hello again, nice to be here. We are so happy to work in consultation with the Department of Education to identify high quality, age appropriate books that are of interest to our students who are not yet reading on grade level. So you see on the slide in front of you a few books that students will receive, and we will offer those books in English, Spanish, and Haitian Creole. We are also working with the Department of Education to incorporate books from the best standards, and so you can see a few of those highlighted for you as well. So one of our goals of the New Worlds Reading Initiative is to really partner with families to help them to support their own children in their homes. And so here are a few examples of literacy resources that families will receive, and these are actually hot off the press. Families will receive these in March. And so students are asked and encouraged to really think about the books that they're reading and to make sense of them with their families. And so there are some suggestions and activities that families will receive to work with their students, again, in their homes around the books and resources that they receive. And you can see a sample here in Spanish and in English as well. We also are providing bookmarks to students and families, and you can see provided here just a couple snapshots of strategies that parents will come across to, again, engage them in reading and really sharing that and developing that love for reading with their children. And so there are some examples of bookmarks that students will receive. I know I visited a home in Alachua County just a few weeks ago and actually witnessed the child tearing apart their packages for the first time and getting those resources, and was able to hand the bookmark to the parent and to share with them how they can engage with their child, especially knowing that their child is a reader that is not yet reading on grade level, how they can encourage them in really utilizing the resources that we're providing for them. We continue to build partnerships with a number of stakeholders across our state, and there's just a lot of excitement. I know I feel it here when I come, as well as when we engage in conversation with partners across the state. And so we know that this initiative would not be successful without the partnership of a number of stakeholders across our state. And so we continue to leverage the resources and the supports that we have, both at the state level as well as within individual communities. As you all know, the Lassinger Center has been around for, we're approaching our 20th anniversary here shortly. And we have always provided supports by way of professional development for teachers in early learning, literacy, and mathematics. We speak about this conversation comprehensive approach, right? And so not just delivering books and resources to the home, but also working with the educators. And so we're happy to actually pilot an initiative in Pinellas County at a local elementary school with our literacy team to think about how do we build on that momentum with our literacy team, with the professional development that they're already providing with those educators, and have the New Worlds Reading Initiative sponsor the initiative to, again, because it is an opt-in program, to have families sign up and to get that excitement going as well. And so we'll continue to work not only in these pilot initiatives across the state, but really working with our team to come up with a strategy for how we sustain this across the state as well. And so this can look like a number of hosting a number of literacy-themed family engagement events, as well as supporting book distributions across the state to students that are harder to reach. And so we've had a number of conversations with organizations, particularly that deal with migrant or homeless or families who are experiencing homelessness, to think about how we reach those families. Because again, we know that the resources are there and we want it to be available to families. It's no good if it sits anywhere. And so we're thinking of, or we have been partnering with these organizations to really consider how we strategically reach students across the state, especially those that may be harder to reach. We are happy to announce that we have actually 64 signed data sharing agreements with districts in our state, as well as continuing to work with the Department of Education to work towards a data sharing agreement that will allow us in the administration of the New Worlds Reading Initiative. And so those numbers are very exciting to share. All right, so now on to our corporate sponsorship. And so we know that the New Worlds Reading Initiative affords us as the Lastinger Center to be a scholarship funding organization. And so corporations can actually provide and receive dollar for dollar tax credit. And so we are in conversation with the speaker and a number of corporations to really think about how we can support the New Worlds Reading Initiative beyond the initial contributions that have already been made. And we're working towards some commitments from a number of organizations. And I would love to share with you a quick video, if I may. I think we have audio set up. And these are just a couple kids that will share with you their favorite books that they received so far.
This is one of my favorite books because I like to learn about space, and my dad likes to learn about space, and I could read it to him, and we can both learn about space together.
Oh, there was an old astronaut who swallowed the moon.
She ate something.
Are you excited to read it with your mom? Awesome.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Members, any questions? Representative Nixon, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I had a question, and I can't remember. How do y'all pick the books exactly? What's the process?
Yeah. You're recognized.
Thank you. So we are working with the Department of Education as well as Scholastic, who is our anchor vendor, to identify books that are high-quality books that are age-appropriate for students who are not yet reading on grade level. And so there's a pretty long process for actually narrowing that list of books down. And then, as you know, students are able to identify topics that are of interest for them. And so we match the topics to the actual book titles that are then shipped out to students.
Okay. Ranking Member Davis, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I have a couple of questions.
You're recognized for a series of questions.
Okay. And thank you for your presentation, by the way. Is the database searchable for parents at this present time?
You recognize.
The database for?
Looking for the books.
So families upon, so they can go to the website, newworldsreading.com, and they can identify topics that are of interest to them. So that's adventure, humor, art, you know, whatever the topics are, they identify those topics, their top three. And then we match titles to those topics that are then mailed out to families.
Okay.
You recognize?
Thank you. So with the families being able to match topics, right, do parents have the ability to request something they don't see or reject something they do see?
You recognize.
Thank you. So currently, families, they don't actually see the book titles themselves. They just identify, you know, I like humor or, you know, science or STEM. And so based on their selection, the books are then mailed to them based on the child's grade, as well as the fact that, you know, whatever the topic that they selected.
So,
thank you, recognize.
Thank you, Chair. So just trying to get an understanding. So the parent or the child picks the topic, humor, comedy, fiction, and then that topic is matched with their age level to make it sure it's age appropriate. But there's no way for the parent to be, I guess, to pick that topic with the child or reject the topic. That's what I'm trying to say. Where is the parental presence in this?
You recognize.
Yeah, thank you. Great question. So families actually select that with their child upon enrollment. So they go to the website and they are able to select their top three right from the start with their child.
Okay.
So that happens with the child and the family.
Parent. Mm-hmm. One last one. Now come back. You mentioned, actually two, you mentioned languages of English, Spanish, and Haitian Creole in one segment, and then English and Spanish in another segment. What are the multiple languages that the books are provided in?
You recognize.
Thank you. So books are provided in English, Spanish, and Haitian Creole, as well as the resources that accompany the books. I just selected just a couple just to showcase, and the two that were on the screen were English and Spanish. But they are all provided in English, Spanish, and Haitian Creole.
Representative Hawkins.
Thank you, Chair. Just a couple of questions. I saw that you talked about a data agreement with the school districts. Can you elaborate a little more on that, what that means?
You recognize.
So the data sharing agreements with the school districts will allow us to really administer the initiative, because it is an opt-in program. And so we want to be sure that, again, we have access to students who are eligible and not yet enrolled.
You recognize.
Follow-up. We have two members here that I think their bills last year went hand in hand, and Rep. Tribolsi's with this one, but Rep. Koster's in closing the achievement gap. And a lot of that has to do with literacy at the young age. In that data sharing, will the school districts know who signed up so they can see if there's progress among those students, or will the teachers know? Does it go that far that we can see if we're getting not the bang for our buck, but, you know, making sure that there is work being done, that everybody's working collaboratively together on it?
You recognize.
Indeed, that's actually the goal of one of the pieces of the data sharing agreement, is so that we could report that back. We've done pretty extensive stakeholder engagement across the state, talking to district leaders as well as families and others about what they'd like to see out of this. That was one of the clear messages that we heard from district administrators repeatedly, was that they'd like access to know who has enrolled. And so that's part of the data sharing agreement, is so that we know who's eligible. We can report that back to them. We can be in coordination about that. We're working towards a system where we'd like to have dashboards. And so that's all getting stood up at the moment. So we could report that back pretty regularly, and districts would have access to real-time information about who's enrolled in the program.
Chair, one final question.
You recognize.
Knowing the achievement gap is, we're in a bad situation right now in Florida and trying to close that. Can you share, or do we know that more males are signing up than females, trying to get that accomplished, or is that something we could find out in the future?
You recognize.
So when families enroll, we currently do not require that they provide those demographic data. Again, we want it to be as simple as possible for families. You know, we ask that they provide their name, their address, grade level, topic selection, et cetera. But part of having the data sharing agreements will allow us to have access to other data, such as demographic, like you mentioned. So we do anticipate that we'll be able to share information that will kind of lend some insight, if you will. But at present, we don't have access to those data just yet.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Representative Nixon.
Thank you, Chair. I don't think I heard the answer to Rep. Davis's question, particularly around if a parent wants to request a book to be included in the the system, the the product, the choice. Can you do that or no?
You recognize.
The short answer at the moment, no. Okay. And so just in terms of the logistics of trying to provide books to, we're talking tens of thousands of children. And so what we've had to do is work with the publisher in order to identify a specific number of titles so that we could then procure those titles and then distribute them to students across the state based upon their topic selection. So at the moment, the selection involved by families is limited to topics and grade levels. And then we are able to then send out those books. We are working with and have talked with the vendor about moving or enhancing those selections in some way into the future. But in terms of just getting it off the ground this quickly, we had to limit some options in order to be able to make that feasible and to be able to get books into the hands of kids very quickly. But we do aim to increase choice and selection in the future as possible.
Just two follow-ups. Yep. Another question I have, I'm an author, but I'm just not asking the question for myself, but just thinking about other authors that are here in the state of Florida, have you ever given it thought to allow them to potentially like pitch to be included in the books that go out?
You recognize.
So we're actually happy to share that in our partnership with Scholastic, we've worked with a number of authors. I don't know them personally, mm-hmm. In particular, those that are native to Florida and that speak Haitian Creole. And so we've worked with those authors as well as illustrators that are native to Florida. And I imagine that that's a space that we can explore further.
All right. And one question.
You recognize.
Give me a second. Hold on. Okay, yeah, sorry. I wanted to know, just in regards to, like, diversity, I hear you say you have books in Haitian Creole. So do you have books not just, you know, blacks, but some with, because, you know, representation matters, right? Anything on Asian Americans, like that type of diversity and things like that? How does it look, cultural diversity? What's the cultural diversity look like amongst the books?
You recognize.
Thank you. So, of course, we do aim to have cultural diversity that represents our state in the book selections that are offered to families. We have a number of titles right now that are representative of our population in Florida.
Members, any additional debate? Nope. Oh, sorry, questions. I apologize. Thank you for correcting me. Representative Williams, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are these books available to all students from the state of Florida, homeschool, charter, private, public? Are they available for all the students in Broward, in the state of Florida?
You recognize.
So at the moment, we've been working through the school district, so all public schools and all charter schools have access. The way that we read the statute, it does not include private schools or even publicly funded private schools, but we aim to get them to as many eligible students as possible. Eligibility is students who are identified as struggling readers according to the rule in the Department of Education. But it's a pretty broad number of students. So at the moment, it's over 500,000 students that we estimate to be eligible. And so we're working towards getting as many of them enrolled in the process as possible.
You recognize Representative Williams.
And you mentioned that you was trying to get the books in homes quickly. What was the rush of quickly and why?
You recognize.
We were required by statute to begin home delivery by December.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Ranking Member Davis.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. So in your presentation, you mentioned a strategy to sustain the programming across the state. And you have partnerships with organizations. I don't want to assume anything. So outside of the partnerships with the organizations, does that partnership include all of the school districts as well?
You recognize?
Absolutely. They are absolutely vital partners, and they have been very enthusiastic partners in the effort, which I think the data sharing agreements that you saw representing the vast majority of districts and lab schools across the state, it shows that they've been very enthusiastic partners because they've been able to work through those kinds of processes with us. They all have appointed a point of contact that has been working with us. We've hosted a number of webinars in which we've engaged them to make sure that they're up to date on what's going to be coming down the pipe in regards to the New Worlds Reading Initiative. But our team has been very pleased with the participation and support that we've received from school districts, and we're excited about continuing to work with them in the future.
You recognize?
All 67.
Yeah, thank you. There's still a couple school districts that we don't have data sharing agreements for currently, and there's some that we're still kind of in communication with them. We held our last informational session with our district points of contact on December 14th, and we continue to provide email communication with districts so they are aware of the number of students who are enrolled in their district by school. We were actually invited just last week to join our point of contact in Broward with the Children's Services Council there, and we were able to share information with the Broward community. And so that's one example of the partnerships that we've created with our partners. We've also identified a small advisory group of districts that are helping us to, you know, really pilot initiatives before we throw it out to the entire group. And so we've had a lot of success with our districts so far, in particular those smaller advisory groups or district groups that we're working with.
Or less.
You're recognized.
I promise. You all also mentioned radio, TV, and print ads as to how you're trying to get to some of the small, hard-to-reach communities. So I guess my question with that is, how are you, outside of the radio, TV, print ads, how are you trying to get to some of those harder-to-reach communities with the school districts helping you? Because they would know where those hard reach communities are as well. So how's that working out?
You're recognized.
I'd say that we are approaching this with a multi-layered strategy. So certainly school districts are partners, but there are plenty of other organizations that have offered their support. So we've heard from, for example, the education foundations across the state that have been willing partners. We've also heard from a number of other community-based nonprofit organizations that have expressed interest. We're in the process of identifying a handful of partners so that we can begin piloting some of those engagement strategies. We're also working towards a much more comprehensive strategy overall in terms of how we'd work and regionally across the state and with a wide variety of partners. That is one of the pieces that's included in the legislation, an expectation that we'd be working with some of those nonprofit partners in order to do that. The mass media campaign is in addition and in complement to all of those approaches. We want to make sure that we're working with organizations that have access to these families and then adding on to events that they may be doing where those families are already showing up and attending so that we can make them aware of this. And then complementary to that, we'd add in these mass media campaigns around maybe they see it in a magazine, maybe they hear it on the radio, and that is something that encourages them to visit the website and then enroll in the program. We hope that all of those approaches collectively will be something that will invite the parents and families to be able to enroll their students in this support, because we think it's really important.
Representative LaMarca, for what I'm told is a short question.
Super short question. In the graph that you showed with the progress of the books going out, there was a spike, and was it December? Do we know what that was from?
You recognize?
I believe I do. So we held our district informational session mid-December, and I believe it happened right around that time when we got some additional information out to our district point of contact, to your point about working with our districts very closely.
Members, any additional questions? All right, I'm going to hand the mic over to Representative Tribolsi.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you both for being here and for your update. It just warms my heart for you to be here. You have done an enormous amount of work in a short amount of time, and I really appreciate how the whole project is continuing to evolve. It's just so exciting. It's so exciting to know that children already have books in their hands. I've talked to some kids in my own district who have received the books. I've gotten pictures from them. And it's just a heartwarming feeling to know that those kids are one step closer to literacy, to reading, to being you, right? As a new legislator, I wasn't really sure where to go with this after it passed.
And there's, you know, we have a big rule book, but we don't know all the rules, right? So there are some unwritten rules. And so I was really excited to follow this bill through this journey thus far. Visiting you at the Lassinger Center was great over the summer. I really appreciated your time and answering all my questions and allowing me to know as much about the process and even interject ideas as well. And keeping up with you and the speaker encouraging me to stay involved as well. And I would encourage all of you to do that with the bills that you pass, to follow them along their road. Don't just, you know, pass a bill and move on. Rep Nixon, and I know that you're gonna, what passed today and once it goes through the floor, you're gonna see it all the way through and it's gonna be a great feeling. So don't stop your engagement once it passes the floor. Also, I've been tracking the numbers too through my office, and on January 20th, you had 82,000 subscribers to the program. And so we've gotten 9 more thousand since January 20th, and that's an amazing feat. And I love the fact, love the fact that it's in English, Spanish, and Creole, which is one of the questions I get most often is, are we leaving kids behind, you know, based on their language? And we're not. So with that, I just thank you for your hard work. Thank you for continuing to gauge the corporate partnerships. Is a nice new piece of the puzzle that I'm enjoying working on myself. And I invite you all on their behalf to go and visit the Lassinger Center at UF, because it is, you will have a newfound love for what they do and all the hard work that is being done to help children in the state of Florida.
Thank you, Representative DeRossi. As a diehard Miami Hurricane, I've tried to avoid the University of Florida, but for the sake of HB3, I will definitely go see the Lassinger Center. You'd like to say something, Dr. Bogart?
If I may, just a last word, Chair Lupus, and I really appreciate the opportunity to do this. I want to make sure that I impress the point that please do get the word out, because if students sign up at any point throughout the rest of this school year, they will receive all 9 books. We will make up any number of books that they have missed throughout the rest of the school year in their final shipment. And so that's why we are aiming to do these additional recruitment pushes with the flyers going out to schools and then followed by the mass media campaign, so that if they enroll at any point leading up to the end of the school year, they will receive them in their final shipment, which will go out in June. And so I just want to impress that point. If there's anything that we can do in giving you resources in order to help with that, we would like to do that. And I want to just thank you for giving us the awesome responsibility of administering this program. Both Dr. Duggins and I are parents of young children, so we certainly know the joy that a new book can be for a child. And I just want to thank you for giving us this awesome responsibility in service of improving literacy across the state, and really appreciate working with the legislature and getting this off the ground. You all have been such wonderful supporters of this effort, so thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Poker. Dr. Duggins, we really appreciate all your work. All right, members, that concludes our meeting today. We are now, this is through week 5 for this committee, so things are beginning to wind down. And in an abundance of caution, I just want to make sure all of you know how much I love you, but I'm going to allow Ranking Member Davis to share some thoughts about the last 5 weeks. You said you wanted to, in the event that, you know, we're winding down? You don't have to. No, so we're winding down, but if you wanted to say anything about how much you've enjoyed this committee, that it's your favorite committee, the best chair you've ever worked with. Okay, we'll wait for the next committee, but I just wanted to...
Happy New Year. No.
Okay, fantastic. No, I just want to say again, as things are winding down, I would be devastated if I didn't get to share this with all of you. But when I first found out that we were bifurcating the K-12 system and having a committee focused explicitly on early learning and elementary education, you all know me, it just warmed my heart. And the fact that I've been given the opportunity to be the chair and to serve with all of you has been probably the greatest blessing I've had in my 4 years in the legislature. And I'm so grateful to each and every one of you for your commitment to these issues, for the incredible bills that you've run, for the difficult questions you've asked. I don't think there's any more important issue that we can work on here in the Florida House. And I would be remiss if I didn't thank a host of people that we don't get to see every day, but Joanna, Jason, Kirsten, Missy, Naomi, Chris, Shayna. We see him every day. Best looking man in Tallahassee, Adam Brink, who has been putting together. Yeah, he. Very well dressed. Sometimes he dresses so flashy, I think he's going to take over a company or something. Looks like a hedge fund manager. But in all seriousness, I have enormous gratitude to our staff, to Speaker Sprouse, to Chair LaValla for giving us this opportunity to have these conversations. And to all of you, just always remember, BCE, best committee ever. All right, with that, seeing no further business in front of the committee, Ranking Member Davis moves we rise.